Just like Iron Man 3 might cause some discussion around what constitutes a Christmas film, so too is the subject of today's podcast. But I think, unlike Iron Man 3, this film has now been accepted as a Christmas classic, and it might be that it has been 33 years since it actually first came out. Set at Christmas, featuring Christmas songs and decorations, all helps to set the tone. But a father travelling home to see his family is what seals this as a Christmas movie for me. The fact that the film centres around a German terrorist group storming a Christmas party atop a skyscraper might cause some to question the Christmas message within this film. But for me, it does what a good Christmas film should, and it evokes the Yuletide feeling with the added bonus of watching Bruce Willis face off against the irreplaceable Alan Rickman. The movie is, of course, Die Hard, and the reason I want to discuss it in relation to Urgent Care is the scene in which a barefoot John McClane has to flee the terrorists by running through lots of broken glass, resulting in the inevitable glass foreign body in the foot. And to discuss this film, and hopefully tell me about a Welsh Christmas, I'm going to call Dr. Zoe Cruz.
Hello, Zoe Cruz speaking.
Dr. Zoe Cruz, FRNZCUC, how are you?
Good, thank you, Guy Melrose, FRNZCUC, how are you?
I'm good. We're nearing Christmas.
Great.
And I just thought I'd give you a call to have a chat about Christmas and urgent care, and I've got a few urgent care related questions about films, and which I thought you would be the perfect person to speak
yes.
to. Are you good
Love
to chat?
Love a good film. I'm always for you, Guy Melrose, always time for you.
Excellent. So, urgent care over Christmas. Are you working this Christmas? Do you know your shifts?
I'm working Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. So I've got the full house.
You've got the full house. So how do you find working at Christmas on, like, the experience of working over Christmas in urgent care?
I don't mind Christmas Day too much if I do an earlier shift, because it tends to be quieter in the morning because people are not injuring themselves just yet. But whenever I've worked evening shifts on Christmas, that's when you get all of the people cutting off bits of themselves instead of chopping up carrots and falling off skateboards that they've never been on and getting drunk and tripping down the stairs or having their heart attack, which is actually indigestion because they've eaten too much turkey. So I find it quite novel because the type of stuff that presents is normally fairly entertaining. But I would always prefer an early shift than an evening shift. And thankfully I'm early, so that's good.
Yeah, I think talking with the others in this series, that was the same sort of feeling, is that Christmas morning in urgent care is quite a nice place to be because everybody is friendly and they're respectful of the fact that you're working. People bring in food everyone just there feels to be a nice atmosphere, and then lunch happens, injuries happen, alcohol starts being drunk, people start doing silly things with their kids' skateboards or hoverboards or air rifles or whatever it is they got for Christmas. So then the afternoon becomes worse. And then how do you find then Christmas compared to, say, New Year and other periods? Like, would you, if you had a choice, would you prefer to be rostered on for Christmas as opposed to another holiday period, another holiday break?
I find Christmas Day shift better than a New Year's Day shift. So New Year's Day, well, I guess it's kind of the same. It's more like the morning's not too bad because people are still drunk or haven't woken up and realized what they've done. But I as long as on a public holiday I'm working the early shift, I'm fine. It's the evenings when people are just like less respectful and silly. And
do you find that people in the places that you've worked accommodate for that? So if you've worked, if you're working one, they give you the other off, or the, do people share it around a bit, or what's the?
Typically, yes, typically this is purely just this. The reason why I'm working all of these is because this, for the 4 week roster, this is my week that I work heaps anyway. So it's just the way it's fallen that I'm working all of the public holidays. And yeah, normally places are like, if you work Christmas Day, you don't have to work New Year's Day, but not always. I think it's just the luck of the roster.
And I've asked this of everybody so far. The same as me, do not come from this hemisphere of the world, and so our Christmases are usually a little bit different, and we're used to maybe a slightly colder Christmas. Sorry, I'm getting my hemispheres mixed up. So what's your since you've been down under, what's your feeling of a cold Christmas versus a warm Christmas?
So if I was in Britain right now, I most definitely wouldn't be working Christmas Day because I would have put in to have it off. Whereas here, I don't really mind because Guy Melrose, it's just not Christmas. Like, it's just not Christmas. Like, going to the beach and eating pavlova and having a barbecue and it being like real hot is not Christmas. So, I found it like novel to begin with. I remember my first Christmas here, like we all went to the beach and like did like photos in bikinis with Santa hats and like but the novelty wore off after 1 year, and now I wouldn't say I'm a particularly Christmassy person in this hemisphere because I would much rather be like snuggled up with jumpers and it having a fire and it being like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it's freezing cold and pitch black and
I've come to the conclusion in my discussions that it's a combination of the cold and the dark and the food and the safety you feel of being all tucked up and warm, coupled with family. And I think you put those two things together and it just makes the Northern Hemisphere Christmas a much more enticing thing. However, when I've had family over here for Christmas, that definitely adds to things, and the novelty of summer, the novelty of the beach, etc., is certainly there, and it is fun and it's relaxing and it's a holiday, but is it a Christmas holiday? I think that's what I struggle with.
You want snow and the dark and Marks and Spencer.
Yeah, there's an advert at the moment on what is it? I think it's Lotto. They're advertising, and somebody's made a Christmas tree with a snow machine, and they're lying under it, and it's in the middle of a field with in the blazing sunshine. So maybe if I win Lotto, I'll get myself a snow machine for. But so you're in Team Cold Christmas.
I am. And don't tell immigration that. Yes. Waiting for my citizenship, they'll be like, "Nah, get rid of it." Yeah.
Because talking with the others in this series, Dave, obviously being a local Kiwi, is of a warm Christmas, although he had the connection with the Dutch side of his family, so that there's a sort of a Northern Hemisphere connection there. But Dinesh and Caitlin, both from Canada and England respectively, fell in the camp of cold Christmas. And what's interesting from them is they both shared things relating to their particular part of the world and how they celebrate Christmas. And even though you're British, you're actually Welsh, and therefore I've never had a Welsh Christmas, although I have shared a flat for 4 years at medical school with a Welshman, which was an experience that I will write about one day when I got through my therapy for it. But I was interested to think, is there anything within the Welsh way of celebrating Christmas that you would say demarcates it as different to the rest of the UK, for example, and the rest of the world?
So 100% I would, because of obviously being fiercely patriotic. So this is part of Welsh history. So this doesn't still happen now, although I would imagine there'd be some places in far-flung rural Wales where they might still vaguely honour this tradition. And I'm hoping, Guy Melrose, that you attach a link with a picture for what I'm going to say to the podcast.
I'm intrigued.
From back in like the 1800s, there was a tradition called Mary Lloyd. So Mary Lloyd is a name. So Mary, M-A, like Mary Lloyd, basically Mary Lloyd. And it was a tradition where they kind of made a hobby horse, but out of the skeleton of a horse's head, and decorated it. And if you look at the pictures, it is utterly terrifying. Like, it looks terrifying. And on Christmas Day, you'd go to people's homes with Mary Lloyd and you'd sing to gain entry to the house. So they'd open the door, you'd knock on the door, someone would open the door, and you would sing like a Welsh carol, and then you'd be allowed entry to the house, and then you had like Christmas carols and like more of a Christmas celebration. So Mary Lloyd was massive back in the day. But yeah, if you so care as to Google a picture of Mary Lloyd Christmas Wales, like, it's terrifying. Like, it's utterly terrifying to look at. So much so, Guy, and whether this is relevant or not, we were talking about this at work a while ago with a colleague, Alex Leslie, and I was like, yeah, Mary Lloyd, it was like this huge thing back in the day, and I showed him pictures and he was like, that's one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. And we left the pictures open at work, and then I had finished my shift and I took my 1 liter water bottle upstairs to just fill it up with water before I drove home. As I was filling it up with water, I noticed Mary Lloyd was on my water bottle. Someone had printed it out and stuck her face on my bottle. And I screamed and hurled the bottle across the staff room. And nobody owned up to it for ages. Like, I just kept saying to people, I was like, who put this picture on my water bottle? And people were like, maybe it was Mary Lloyd herself. Like, and I was just utterly, like, terrified. Like, she's terrifying to look at. But that's, yeah.
Well, I have to say, that's not what I was expecting about the Welsh. I'll tell you what I was expecting. And I mentioned this to Dave when I spoke about the snowman, the movie that we talked about with Dave. Probably my favourite Christmas movie, if I had to choose just one, my Desert Island movie. Even though it's a short animated film, I still think it's a Christmas film. And I mentioned to Dave how the song that features in that film is Walking in the Air, which until looking into it just this year, I'd always assumed the film song was sung by Aled Jones, because there was a version of that song that was number one for, not number one, but number, I think it got to number five, but it was in the charts for a long time, and it was very famous. And apparently it's a different singer. Apparently it's a Yorkshire singer who did the film version, although it still sounds fantastic. And so Aled Jones, I've always been aware of since I was little, and I scarily found out he's now in his 50s, which makes me feel very old. But he's been a television presenter in the UK. He's a very wholesome still got a very nice voice, even though his voice broke as he got older. But he's just one example, and you could name Tom Jones, you could name Shirley Bassey. The Welsh and singing, the two go together like a glove. And so singing at Christmas is all about carols and going to church or going around people's houses and singing Christmas carols. So I'm having obviously spent time with a Welshman during university, the only other Christmas thing I probably would have garnered from him is that mince pies seem to be a big part of his life. I don't know if that's a Welsh thing. So the two things I'd like to know from you are Christmas carols, yes, and mince pies. Do you associate them with a Welsh Christmas?
Yes, Christmas carols, yes, because nobody on this earth sings as well as the Welsh. So a good Welsh male voice choir for Christmas carols, beautiful. Mince pies, no, I thought that was just a general Christmas thing. I mean, all of my siblings make exceptionally good Christmas mince pies, but I didn't. I don't associate that with Welshness. No,
that's not a Welsh thing. That's just him. He used to announce that the mince pie season had begun, and with great pride, come back from the shop with mince pies. And then Christmas officially started when Reese said the mince pie season has begun. Even now, I still get texts saying first mince pie of the season. But so it's obviously not a Welsh thing. That's just a Reese thing. But yeah, so singing is a thing. And being down here, how do you indulge in your singing, Welsh singing for Christmas? Is there like a Welsh choral society in New Zealand that you can all go and like get your fix with?
Not that I know of, but my partner will tell you that I listen to Welsh Christmas carols very loudly and sing very loudly around the house time of year. So yeah. Yes,
so maybe there's a gap in the market then. Let's see. You should start the Welsh, the New Zealand Welsh Choral Christmas Union or something.
Maybe I should.
Now, for me, that being this far from home, one of the ways I find I try and get some of Christmas spirit going is watching films, and most of them tend to be Northern Hemisphere cold things, like The Snowman that we talked about with Dave, or the other films we've talked about with the others. So I just find it helps to ignite that Christmas feeling, even when it's like 28 degrees and I'm sitting in shorts feeling very un-Christmassy. So what films do you would make Christmas feel like Christmas for you?
So Love Actually, 100%.
Another one?
Because it's just so festive because it's snowing and it's just, you know, the kids' Christmas concerts and the department stores in it. Oh, and Mr. Bean's in it as well, isn't he? He's got that fantastic little cameo, which is hilarious.
Because he appears doing the packing of the gift, which is part of that horrible, well, that wonderfully
that
acted,
evil,
but horrible.
Anyone that can make Emma Thompson cry.
And then he turns up at the end to help the little boy get through the checkout to get to his girlfriend.
He does.
So he appears twice, which is brilliant.
Good on him. Elf, because it is utterly hilarious. I think Elf's probably my favourite Christmas film, after Die Hard. but yeah, Elf, just because it's silly and it's just like, yeah, it's just that spirit of like silliness for Christmas, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. I love the way it's an adult film, but it's got a nod towards kids, as in it doesn't take itself seriously, but it's funny no matter what age you are. And it manages to tell a Christmas story without it being overly saccharine or overly kind of twee.
Yeah.
We talked about that with Dinesh because of the raccoon bite incident. I thought there was some urgent care learning from that, which was which there turned out to be. But it's interesting that Love Actually, Elf, both those films have come out of pretty much every conversation I've had around Christmas films. So both of them did something right. And they're not perfect. You can find flaws in them if you look at them. But once a year you put them on and they just make you feel like Christmas. So you can, I think it's Selfridges that they go into for the shopping. They're at Heathrow, which again, going home for Christmas was always such a nice thing to do, whether you were living in the same country as your family or you're overseas. That idea that everyone travels for Christmas is such a key part of the feeling of Christmas. And then all the other bits and bobs. And I think as a segue to get into the film that we will chat about, Alan Rickman is in Love Actually, and it's outstanding in that film because the way the relationship with him and Emma Thompson unfolds, it gives that film its a real kind of emotional centre. And it was interesting when I was reading about the reunion that they had with Love Actually for Red Nose Day. Apparently Emma Thompson declined to appear in it because it was 1 year after the death of Alan Rickman. And she said she just couldn't bring herself to revisit that because it was, you know, such a good mate and such a good kind of relationship existed there, both on and off screen. And that segue, I guess, is Alan Rickman. His first proper film was a film called Die Hard, which rewrote the the way in which action films were made, and it's all about terrorists taking over a building, using hostages to get money to go off and live overseas with their ill-gotten gains. And it doesn't sound very Christmassy, but it is regarded as one of the best Christmas films out there, and it's certainly a big favourite of mine. Do you think Die Hard is a Christmas film?
100%.
100%, good.
He's going home for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's snowing. And there's like Christmas trees and Christmas lights and presents. 100% a Christmas film.
Yeah. The theme of going home for Christmas, tick. The things in the background, the, like you say, the decorations, the there's a scene when he sends a message by putting a body in an elevator and it's dressed with a Christmas hat and some lights, yep. And says ho ho ho, now I have a machine gun. And so there's all those sort of references to Christmas throughout, and there's the music as well. I love the weather outside is frightful plays at the end. And Christmas in Hollis, I think it's called, which is a kind of a rap Christmas carol song that they play at the beginning that I always love. It just makes me feel Christmassy just hearing that song anytime. So I'm glad you agree it's a Christmas film, because running around shooting, blowing up buildings doesn't sound Christmassy, but it makes me feel like Christmas. And Alan Rickman is I'm struggling to think of a film that he's been in that I didn't like at least his contribution to it.
Yeah, he's phenomenal in everything he's ever been in.
Do you have a particular favourite film that would stand out for you, or a moment, or a
of Alan Rickman's? Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. He was amazing in Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah.
Alongside Kate Winslet, and that's very old. That's pre-Titanic, so 25 years ago.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves happened just after his Die Hard, and he was this sort of unknown English actor in Die Hard, and he played Hans Gruber, a German terrorist. And people were like, who is this person? But he'd been doing all of his acting, kind of studying in the UK and on stage and the like. And so it wasn't really a surprise to anyone who knew of him, but to the worldwide audience, it was a surprise. And then he turned up in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves opposite Kevin Costner.
So
there's a Christmas reference in that, because when he's getting angry and he's throwing people around and he goes, call off Christmas. And
eat
his heart out with a spoon. The way he says it is so...
still quote it now, and my sibling. Like, if we're angry with one another, we'll be like, I'm gonna eat your heart out with a spoon. Like, it's just, he's just iconic. And he was wonderful as Snape.
Yes. I don't think you could see Snape and not see... It's almost to me like if I read a James Bond book, the image I see of Bond is Sean Connery, because they just got it right at the first go. And I think if you think of Snape now, you couldn't not see Alan Rickman. And he's a big loss to have lost him, but he certainly helped made Die Hard. And when I watched it last, I thought of Urgent Care because of a scene in which he is trying to get to John McClane, who's played by Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis has gone to this office party to try and meet up with his wife, who he's temporarily separated from, and they're trying to get back together. And that's the whole theme of him going home to Christmas to see his family. And so he's getting dressed and washed after a long flight when the terrorists come in. And so he is currently barefoot and in a vest when suddenly all hell breaks loose. And so he spends most of his time running around this building without any shoes on. And Alan Rickman knows this when they're trying to track him down, and says at one point on this level that has a load of glass windows, he tells his henchmen to shoot the glass to make this all the broken glass on the ground, because he knows that John McClane is going to have to walk across there. And then sure enough, he does, and he gets away, as he keeps doing throughout the film. And then the next scene, we see him sitting in a washroom trying to pick glass out of his foot. And so it made me think of how relatively common it is to see glass in the foot in somebody, particularly at summertime, because people are on the beach with bare feet. Urgent care glass in the foot, is it something you see reasonably frequently?
Yeah. Look, foreign bodies in the feet are, I think, pretty common, Christmas or not Christmas. But I'd imagine there'll be a peak of foreign bodies in the foot round about Christmas time, just because people are a little bit more drunk and on the beach a lot and accidentally breaking bottles on the beach. You definitely see it more at Christmas time, but foreign bodies in the feet is almost bread and butter in urgent care, I think we see it so frequently.
So if somebody says to you they've got glass in their foot, do you x-ray them?
Good question, Guy Melrose. So I do x-ray them, but if I can't see something, if I can't see a foreign body, if someone gives a very sound history of glass in foot, and there's an entry wound and they're in a lot of pain, if you just even kind of gently palpate the area, if I can't see something on the x-ray, to me that doesn't rule it out. I'd then go and get an ultrasound scan, because depending on the size of the piece of glass and whereabouts it is, you're not always necessarily going to see glass on an x-ray. So if I see it, then wonderful, then I've got something to go by. But if I don't see it in a history that's clearly of a foreign body, I'd probably ultrasound scan it. I might have a go at removing it first, but if there's no clear idea of how deep or size, I'd probably ultrasound it.
Yeah, because if you, sometimes they come in and they're visible, you can grab it there, right there and then. It doesn't, you don't need to, but often it's gone in and it kind of, I always think of it a bit like a jelly. If you were to press something into a jelly, it sort of gets sucked in into it, and before you know it, you've lost it. So the foot seems to kind of gather up foreign objects, and before you know it, it's round the corner, and you can't just look at the hole and go, oh, there's no glass there. But it's quite reliable if a patient says they feel like there's glass in their foot, because once you've removed it, they definitely feel like it's not there anymore and they can walk on it again. So, but interestingly, looking at the Radiopedia, and we'll link in the show notes to this page, they quote that only 10% of x-rays ordered for retained foreign bodies are positive. But having said that, x-rays are excellent at detecting radio opaque foreign bodies, with around 85% being detected. And they say that glass is always radio opaque, because I was always led to believe for a while that certain motor window glass has got lead in it to make it show up on x-rays or make it easier, and they put other stuff in there to kind of make it easier to show up. But it seems to suggest that most glass should show up, but if it's tiny, tiny wee flakes, then it probably, you might miss it. So if you've got a high index of suspicion, for us at least, an ultrasound is relatively easy to then get to. But that isn't the case, then speaking to your orthopedic surgeon, and they may CT it, I guess, or go further. But if you find the glass there and you know it's there and you're going to remove it, the foot is quite a sore bit of the body for starters, to inject. So what's your experience with it, with numbing somebody, the sole of somebody's foot, with local anaesthetic?
I'm exceptionally kind, and I will always give people laughing gas. I'll always give people nitrous when I put... I give people nitrous oxide for digital blocks as well as feet, because when I was 14, 15, needed a digital block for some sutures, and I vomited all over the doctor because it just hurt so much. And also, I'm just not particularly good with anything. And so I always give people nitrous for that. And I had a piece of nail in my foot, like a nail that you step on, when I was about 16, 17, I think, and needed that taking out. And same thing, when they put the anesthetic in my foot, I nearly kicked them. And so I'm very, very kind. I give people laughing gas for any anaesthetic in their foot.
I remember as a student doing radiology placement, and we were doing a sentinel node scan. So it's like a radio isotope scan, and they injected around the suspicious lesion and then scanned the nodes with the radio scanner, whatever you call it, I forget the name. But it involved injecting this person's foot, which was where the cancer was. And I just remember the guttural screams of pain this person went through as they were trying to inject this foot. And the radiologist said, yes, the foot's very sore to inject. One thing I have found is if they're kind enough to have stuck themselves with a bit of glass in their foot, there's often a hole. And you can actually go down that hole with the needle quite a long way before you start getting to anywhere that's sore. So it kind of gives you a little window to get in, and you can let the anesthetic kind of slowly seep in around the edges of the foreign body. So if there is a nice hole there, then you don't have to inject through the skin. But it is very painful, and I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it. Wouldn't want to have it done to anybody for but obviously it's sore having a bit of glass in your foot as well. So yeah, you always use the gas for everybody, adults and kids alike.
I do.
And then if you have done the X-ray, it's quite useful because you can then see how big the bit is. So when you pull the bit out, you've got it there still to you can go that it's all gone. And it's a very satisfying thing, isn't it, when you've removed it and they put it in a little cup, particularly if it's for a kid, and they can take it home and show their friends and teacher and everything that here's a bit chunk of glass. But yeah, I think when in New Zealand we probably see it more than I remember seeing in the UK because the weather, we only get about 2 days of summer, and where everyone rushes off to the beach and puts on shorts and seems to. Whereas here we've got like 3 or 4 months where people are in kind of summer mode, and so I think people are barefoot and at the beach and just running around in a lot more here, and it happens to coincide with our Christmases, so I think that's probably why we see more of it. So Die Hard, John McClane sitting there chatting on the phone, pulling glass out with his bare fingers. It's probably not that realistic because I don't think I've always required anaesthetic and some decent forceps to try and get this out. And his sort of grimace that he puts on when he's pulling the glass out is not particularly. He doesn't look that much in pain, but maybe he's just a very hard, tough individual.
It's Bruce Willis.
Well, yes. Bruce Willis. And it's funny you mentioned, because I haven't talked about this, but my other favourite film, and Caitlin mentioned this, was is Home Alone. And you mentioned a nail in the foot, and there's that great scene in where he's put the nail on the step, and you see the foot slowly go onto it. And
All the way
yeah,
makes me feel sick.
but you've had both. You've had the experience of a nail in the foot, which is.
Awful. Awfully
So the
painful.
take home from this would be X-rays are reasonably good at showing glass, but if in doubt, move up through ultrasound or refer. But most people should know if there's something in there because you just feel it. You walk on it and you go, "There's something in my foot." It becomes more difficult actually because at least glass is big and you can feel it and you can get a hold of it and pull it out. Whereas when you've got little spikes and thorns, it gets a little bit more complicated, doesn't it? And they're much harder to remove. But yeah, imaging is obviously important. Be kind to your patient when anaesthetizing it because you need it to be nice and numb to get rid of it. But the numbing itself can be pretty miserable. But have you ever used any gels or anything like lignocaine gel or the
No,
topical stuff?
I think once for a kid, I think I put some Emla around it. But because Emla can take like 30 minutes, it's just not really like feasible. May as well just get some gas.
So be kind, and I guess if you are going to the beach on Christmas Day, putting on a pair of shoes to get to the beach would be good, and don't leave your beer bottles to break on the gla on the sand for other people.
100%.
We should all
Yeah.
look out for each other. So thank you, Zoe, for telling me about this horrific sounding Christmas
Marie
traditions from
Lloyd.
Wales.
Terrifying.
I'll put some links in the show notes, but it sounds like it should be made into a film itself, like a kind of some kind of Midsummer or
it's kind of have you ever seen the what's that film, The Wicker Man?
Yes, that's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, it's that kind of vibe. It's that kind of vibe.
And the original Wicker Man with Edward Woodward, not the remake with Nicolas Cage.
Another conversation there.
I can talk about the joys of some Nicolas Cage films, which then makes me even more exasperated by some of his career choices. And the Wicker Man was definitely one of his.
That was horrendous.
He should have parked that one because the original is fantastic. That's something about Wales I didn't know, and I now know that Reese is just mad about mince pies, and it's nothing to do with his heritage.
Nothing to do with that, Welsh.
And this time next year, we will catch up with you to discuss how forming the New Zealand Welsh choral Christmas choral society will go.
My choir of one.
Oh, there must be a few more Welsh people out there.
There are. I've got some surrogate family here who are very good singers, so I'll get them in on it.
Excellent. So
wonderful.
Good luck working over Christmas. I hope you have a pleasant one, and thank you for chatting.
Thank you,
Guy. And we will catch you at work.
My pleasure.